Judges chapter 17 and 18. We've got five chapters left in the book of Judges, but there's really only two stories left. And by calling them stories, I don't mean that they're fiction, but they're accounts of things that happened. And I think it's important when we look at these to try to look at them as the whole narrative. And so I'm not going to go into a ton of detail about all the different things going on in Judges 17 and 18, but there is a definite point to what we're going to read about tonight. And I've titled this lesson, Auction Block Religion. Auction Block Religion. In fact, what has been called the greatest sermon of the 20th century was preached on this text of Judges chapter 17 and 18. If you've never listened to the sermon, Ten Shekels and a Shirt by Paris Reedhead, I would highly encourage you to download that on sermon audio, look it up, listen to it. It's a fantastic message, a very convicting message about the potential that each of us have to sell ourselves out. And that's exactly what we're going to see happening here as we read in Judges chapter 17 and 18. I think we're going to get through all this. Please participate. And I think you'll find this to be a very fascinating study tonight. So let's start reading verses 1 through 6. And just to kind of set the stage here, we've talked about all the different judges that the book of Judges covers. From the very first to the most recent one, Samson, we've covered their lives. There's 12 different judges specifically mentioned. We're not going to read any more about specific judges. The last five books really tell us about what's going on with the nation as a whole, with a couple specific tribes. The 17 and 18 is really going to be a lot about what happens to the tribe of Dan. And then chapters 19, 20, and 21 are about a crisis and a civil war, a kind of a civil holy war in Israel in regard to the tribe of Benjamin. And so we'll study both of these separately. I think the thing that links these two stories together is what we're going to be reading in verse 6 of chapter 17. And you not only see it in verse 6 of 17, but we'll see it in chapter 18, and we'll see it in chapter 19 and in chapter 21. The very last verse of Judges is what we're going to be reading in verse 6 of this chapter. It says, In those days there was no king in Israel. Everyone did what was right in his own eyes. And we're going to hear that over and over and over as we look at these next two narratives here. So let's read these first six verses, Judges chapter 17, about Micah and his mother. Who would like to read that for us? Six verses. Chapter 17, yep.
Now there was a man from the mountains of Ephraim whose name was Micah. And he said to his mother, the 1,100 shekels of silver that were taken from you, and on which you put a curse, even saying it in my ears, here is the silver with me, I took it. And his mother said, may you be blessed by the Lord, my son. So when he had returned the 1,100 shekels of silver to his mother said, I have wholly dedicated the silver from my hand to the Lord for my son, to make a carved image and a molded image. Now, therefore, I will return it to you. Thus he returned the silver to his mother. Then his mother took 200 shekels of silver and gave them to the silversmith. And he made it into a carved image and a molded image, and they were in the house of Micah. The man Micah had a shrine, he needed ephod and household idols, and he consecrated one of his sons who became his priest. In those days, there was no king in Israel, and everyone did what was right in his own eyes.
All right. So Micah was a man of the tribe of Ephraim. And if you remember what we studied in the book of Judges, Ephraim was not known for being a real godly people. They were very prideful. They were a prominent tribe. They were the ones who picked a fight with Gideon because Gideon didn't call them the battle. And then they did the same thing with Jephthah. Although Jephthah wasn't quite as nice about it as Gideon, Jephthah pretty much ravaged the men of Ephraim over all that and killed a bunch of them. If you remember the whole thing where he could find out whether they were an Ephraimite by how they pronounced the word Shibboleth, and if they couldn't pronounce it right, he knew they were from Ephraim and he killed them on the spot. And so this was the tribe that Micah was from. Okay, Judges did not paint them in a really bright light. And we read about a man named Micah. Now, this is bad Micah. There is another Micah, a prophet, who is a different Micah, and he's a godly Micah. This Micah, not so godly. What type of man was Micah? What type of man was Micah? Huh? He went where the money was. He's a man who would steal from his own mother. He stole 1,100 pieces of silver from his own mother. If you remember the price that Delilah was paid for Samson, she was given 1,100 pieces of silver by each of the Philistine lords, and we talked about how much money that was. That was a huge amount of money. And he stole that from his mom. But we seem to read about a change of heart in this chapter of Micah. Did Micah keep the money? No, he gave it back. What a change of heart. Why did Micah give the money back? She put a curse on it. Let's not be fooled into thinking Micah did this because he felt bad about what he did. Micah's mom didn't know who stole the money. Micah had stolen it. And while Micah was there, his mother said, basically, God curse whoever stole this money from me. Well, Micah was at least superstitious enough to think that meant something. And he was scared because all of a sudden he had all this money, but it was cursed. He was cursed. And so Micah returned the money to his mom and said, Mom, you know the money you cursed? here it is. I stole it. I took it. You can have it back. Well, what did Mom do then? What did Mom do then? Well, she's got the money back, but I mean, she's a mom, okay, and she loves her son. She had just cursed whoever stole it. Now he gave it back. And so, you know, Micah's fear is this curse, and his mom, who loves her wayward son, even though he stole from her, doesn't want him cursed, and so she blessed him. I'm not sure how much her blessing is worth, and it sounds like, oh, what a godly, loving mom to try to turn this thing around. But she seems to be concerned about her curse as well and trying to turn things around for Micah. And so she goes beyond just blessing Micah. She wants to somehow try to turn things around so that God's going to bless this situation. So what does she do with this money? What does she say she's going to do with this money at the beginning of verse 3? Or toward the middle of verse 3, excuse me. I'm going to dedicate it to God. I'm going to give this money to the Lord, to Jehovah, the God of Israel. If you just stopped right there, you'd think, wow, that's great. What a godly woman. But what does she do with this money that she dedicates to the Lord? There's at least five things wrong that she does here. She dedicates the money to the Lord, but if you look at scriptures in Leviticus, if you dedicate something to the Lord, you give it to the priests to be used in the service of the Lord. Who does she give the 1,100 silver pieces to? her son. She gave it back to Micah. Then she makes a graven image for worship. That's kind of like one of the commandments, right? You don't make a graven image, right? And he took it and made an ephod. An ephod, if you remember, was the priestly garment of the high priest. They would have an ephod. So this ephod defied the ephod of Israel's high priest. And then Micah goes on, and he does what with one of his sons? Micah, huh? He makes one of his sons a priest. Now, is Micah a Levite? He's an Ephraimite. He is not a Levite. Are Ephraimites supposed to be priests in Israel? No, only Levites. And even then, only sons of Aaron were the priests. Remember that for later. You had to be in the tribe of Levi, but then you had to be within Levi of the lineage of Aaron to be a priest. The other Levites did things connected to the service of God, but only the descendants of Aaron were priests. Okay? And so Micah says, I'm going to make my son a priest, and I'm going to make him an ephod. And not only that, we see something else that he did there in verse 5. He set up the shrine for this graven image. He made an ephod, and he also made, what else? Some household gods. Some other gods to go with them. So this 1,100 pieces of silver that was dedicated to Yahweh was used to do exactly the opposite of what God had been telling them to do. I mean, it was almost just like spitting in his face to say, oh, this is for you, Lord. And then just completely disregard what the Lord had said. Now, maybe we think, oh man, maybe they just didn't know what the Lord wanted. We'll find out in a little bit here, that's really not the case. And after we read that, lest we be confused about what's going on, we read that verse 6. There was no king in Israel, and everybody did whatever looked good to them. Nobody was living under any authority. Now, did Israel have a king? Did they have a king? They didn't have that type of king. But who was meant to be the king of Israel? The Lord. Back in the days of Moses, he spoke of God, the Lord, being their king. In Deuteronomy 33, you could read that. And in Judges 8, remember when Gideon won the battle against the Midianites? They came to Gideon and said, hey, we'll make you a king. And Gideon said, no, the only king you're going to have is the Lord. The Lord was Israel's king. He was meant to be Israel's king. He had given them a law. He had given them a way of being able to tell them what he wanted through the priesthood. So he had set everything up to rule. And he said, I'm going to go with you into battle. I'm going to tell you where to go. I'm going to go with you. The angel of the Lord would go with them. He was meaning to exercise himself as their king and as their leader. And they would come together under him. But the point was, and here's the point, these people were living without a source of authority. That's what a king is, right? A king is authority. A king is one who has power and a word and tells you what to do. And if they're anything worth their salt, they're a king who makes things happen. Right? And these people were living apart from any authority, and they were their own authority. Everybody just did whatever looked good to them. And we're going to see that come back to bite these people too. Any questions before we move on? Let's finish off this chapter. Let's read verses 7 through 13 now. Who'd like to read verses 7 through 13? Mary.
Now there was a young man of the family of Judah, who was a Levite, and he sojourned there. And the man departed from the town of Bethlehem in Judah to sojourn where he could find a place. And as he journeyed, he came to the hill country of Ephraim, to the house of Micah. And Micah said to him, "Where do you come from?" And he said to him, "I am a Levite of Bethlehem in Judea, and I am going to sojourn where I may find a place." And Micah said to him, "Stay with me, and be to me a father and a priest, and I will give you 10 pieces of silver a year, and a suit of clothes, and your living." And the Levite went in, and the Levite was content to dwell with the man, and the young man became to him like one of his sons. And Micah ordained the Levite, and the young man became his priest, and was in the house of Micah. Then Micah said, "Now I know that the Lord will prosper me, because I have a Levite as priest."
All right. I want you just to continue to see how messed up this is. And so we see what Micah's like. He's a man who'll steal from his own mama. Right? And he's an idolatrous man. And his mom is right in there with it. And so these people are nuts spiritually. They may be very wealthy. They may look very impressive. But spiritually, they are out there. Okay? Now, we got a Levite that comes to town. Finally. Somebody, you know, who's hopefully has some sense, who will know about the things of the Lord. Right? Because Levites were raised to do that, to be used in service to God. We read about this young Levite, this young man. He said that he sojourned in Bethlehem, which means he had lived there for a while. Okay? Bethlehem was not one of the Levite cities, though. If you remember, when Israel was scattered, the tribes were scattered, they were each given a land, an inheritance, except Levi was not given their own land. They were given cities scattered around Israel. The specific cities were named by Moses or by Joshua. But Bethlehem wasn't one of them. Why was this Levite living in Bethlehem? We don't know. But there's probably not a good reason for it, because God had ordained that they live specific other places. And so we kind of get the sense that this guy, at least either his family or he, is somebody who's not too concerned about what God had said about where they should live. So why is this young Levite on the road? What's he doing? Why is he on the road? He was looking for opportunity. I think that's a great way to say it. He didn't have roots set down any place. He wasn't content with where he was. And so he was looking for opportunity for something better. I'm looking for a place to stay. Meaning where I was wasn't good enough, or he would have stayed there. So he's looking for something new, okay? So because he's a Levite, and because we know what Levites are supposed to be doing, what do we know about this man already?
He was a priest.
Well, we'll talk about that. He was from the tribe of Levi. He was from the tribe of Levi. We don't know that he's a descendant of Aaron. In fact, we'll find out later who he is. But he's from the tribe of Levi. What type of guy is this? He is willing to compromise. Morally compromise. That's the type of young man that this is. So, as we read about what happened, this deal that Micah and the Levite made. Because the Levite's saying, "Hey, I'm looking for some place to stay." And Micah's like, "Hey, you're a Levite? Why don't you stay with me? and I'll make you like a father. I mean, even though this was a young man, but, you know, someone of authority in my house. And I'm wealthy. I'll give you 10 pieces of silver every year. I'll give you a new set of clothes. I mean, I got an ephod that you can wear. And I'll take care of your room and board. If you will stay and be my priest. And so we see that the Levite went in. And how did the Levite feel about this? In verse 11. How did the Levite feel about this? Content. He was like, hey, I'm in a better situation than I was in. And why was it better? What made it better?
Huh?
He had a home. Place to be. He had a home before when he left. Why was he content at this place? He's getting paid more. More authority, maybe? More respect? Micah was probably a wealthy man, and his mom. They're probably wealthy people in that area, is my guess. And he'd be like the priest in that home of significance. He's kind of moving up in the world. So I can be content here. This is auction block religion. This Levite sold his services as a man of God to Micah for 10 shekels a year. A suit of clothing and room and board. Micah thought he was getting a good deal because he was going to now have a real Levite priest. So much for his son that he had ordained to be a priest. Sorry, I got me a Levite now. I've upgraded, right? Who knows how that made Micah's son feel. Maybe he was like, finally, I didn't really want to do this anyway. Or maybe he was kind of like hurt. But what does that tell us about Micah? That he wanted a Levite priest. Micah knew something about what God had said because he knew Levites were something unique and special to God. And so we know that for Micah to go and ordain his own son to be a priest, he knew that's not what God wanted, even though they said it was for God. We knew he knew something, or else why would he care for this young man who happened to be wandering along? Who is he better than his own son? But this is a Levite. And so that's what starts making this all the worse, is that Micah knew something about what God wanted. But he didn't care to follow all of God's laws, just those that were convenient. And that's why this passage is so powerful, is because we start to see a picture of modern American cultural Christianity, which is very happy to use the name of Christ. But when it comes to what Christ has to say about our life, like Him actually being King and Lord over our lives, that we would seek to know what He wants and to submit to it, I don't really want a king. I want to be able to use his name, make myself feel better, but I really want to be able to do whatever I want. And that's why this is such a powerful text today, because that's exactly what is going on here. Verse 13, the last verse of that chapter, is very telling. Why did Micah worship the Lord? Why did Micah worship the Lord? Because he wanted to be successful. He saw God as a way to be successful. Maybe he saw having this Levite as finally the way he was going to get out of this curse that his mother had cast when he had stolen that money from her. Well, now that I got a Levite, now God's really going to bless me. I'm not sure exactly what it was, but Micah's worship of the Lord, which we know is totally off anyway because he's worshiping graven images and other gods, even that was not from a sincere heart recognizing the awesomeness of God. It was, God, I'll do some things and acknowledge you in some ways so that you make my life better. Because at the end of the day, who was Micah really worshiping? Micah was worshiping Micah. Micah wanted what Micah wanted. And if I got to steal, or if I got to play religion for a while, I'll twist that and suit, make it suit me. Hire a Levite, whatever I think I need to do to get what I want so that I can have a great life. Any comments before we move on? So if you remember, I said this was actually about the tribe of Dan. And so far we've not said anything about Dan. So let's go on and read here verses 1 through 10 about the tribe of Dan and what was going on with them. Who'd like to read verses 1 through 10? Nice and odd for us. Anna. Thank you. So it tells us again, verse 1, in those days there was no king in Israel. And in those days, the tribe of Dan, they were looking for a place to live. They had no inheritance. Now, it says that no inheritance among the tribes of Israel had fallen to them. If you were to look back in Joshua, you would see that they were given a land. They were given places to be in the midst of Israel. But if we read back in Judges chapter 1, the tribes of Dan had a problem. And the name of Dan's problem was the Ammonites, who took over the good land. And when Dan went down to drive out the Ammonites pushed them out. They didn't have faith. They didn't persevere and push through, trust in God. And so they had been living squashed in the hills, the less fertile, the not as good land in that area, and pretty soon they were outgrowing it. So the fact that they had no inheritance was not because there wasn't an inheritance given to them, but because they didn't have the faith to go down and drive out the Ammonites and take it. And so they are wandering now looking for another place. And they sent out five of their noble men, meaning wealthy or influential men, to go out and find a place to spy out and explore it. Kind of like the 12 spies did back in the day when Israel was going to come into the promised land, right? Well, this is kind of like that. And remember, where did the 12 spies go when they went to go spy out the land? The spies that went over, actually, before they came over to conquer the promised land, Joshua, they sent some men out. They went into the city of Jericho, and where did they go? Yeah. The prostitute, Rahab. Yeah. Those spies went to a prostitute, and these spies went to a prostitute as well. Levi, the priest, he had prostituted himself. Simply means to sell yourself. And that's what this young man had done here. They go and they're exploring the land, and they happened upon the house of Micah, and they were going to stay there. And they heard the voice of this young Levite. Now, the place where the Danites had lived was not in Bethlehem. So the only way they would have recognized the voice of this young man is if this was a young man who had been kind of traveling around, getting around, somebody who wasn't content to stay in one place. And so that's the only thing that makes sense to me, is that this was a young man who had gotten around and he would not stay where he was supposed to. And they recognized his voice and they started talking to him, and they said, "Well, what are you doing here?" And the young Levite was like, "Well, hey, this is what Micah did for me. Here's my deal. I get, 10 pieces of silver a year, a suit of clothes, I get my room and board, and I get to be his priest." And the response of the Danites, when they saw this, what should the people of Israel have done if they had seen this whole setup that Micah had? What would have been the biblical response? Rebuke? With a stone? To stone them? I mean, this was idolatry going on in Israel. But what was the response of the Danites when they heard about Micah? The response was, "Hey, cool. Can you tell us if God's going to bless our journey?" That's pretty much what the tribe of Dan said. They had no problem with what was going on at all. When they saw the idols and all these things, and here's this guy being a priest for a guy's house and all this, no problem. "Hey, you're a Levite. Will you tell me if God's going to bless our journey?" Now, is there something weird about that to you? Anybody? Okay, so they knew this guy's background. It's kind of weird that they're even trusting him. What's something else that's weird about this whole request? So, you want to know if God's going to bless something. At what point do you ask? Do you ask before you go make a decision to see what God's will would be? Because that's the way things work back in Judges 1. The people went to the Lord and they said, "Lord, which tribe should go up first?" And the Lord gave them direction. Here, they've already decided what they're going to do. They're on the way to go do it. And then they say, "Is God going to bless us or not?" Kind of got it backwards. It's like, "God, I figured out what I want to do. Please bless this." And so that's messed up. And we don't see that the Levite went to pray, consult God, They said, "Inquire of God, please, that we may know whether the journey on which we are setting out will succeed." And the priest said to them, "Go in peace. The journey on which you go is under the eye of the Lord." He's giving them a blessing. Yeah, God's with you guys. Now, Psalm 33, we know the eyes of the Lord are upon the righteous, and He hears their plea. And so the Levite is saying, what you're doing is good, godly, and righteous. God is with you. What authority did that man have to give this blessing? This man who was leading a family in the worship of idols under the name of God, competing with the true Levitical priesthood located at the tabernacle. No legitimacy. And when the Danites went and they found this land in northern Israel, the land of Laish, when you look at the things that they were thinking as they were looking at this report of the land, in verses 7, and they talk about it down and also in verse 10, and verse 9 and 10. What are the primary reasons that they decided to go take that land of Laish? Huh? That this was a really nice land. It's really prosperous. It's a good land. And the people there are wealthy. They're unsuspecting, meaning that they're not ready for an attack. And they're not attached to others who might come to their aid. So you got this really nice place with these people who aren't ready for battle and no one's going to come help them. They're vulnerable. And they're rich. Let's go take it. What was their moral justification for doing this? What was their moral justification for going to take this land? You read it in verse 10. God has given this into our hands. Look what the Lord is giving us. This people, this land, it's wealthy and it's nice and they're vulnerable and they have no one that's going to come and help them. Let's go take this. God's doing it. Now, what about God giving them the other inheritance that is already spelled out by Joshua? God gave them that, but they weren't brave enough to go and fight the Ammonites. They didn't have the faith to go do that, but they were ready to go take on a bunch of unsuspecting people in Laish. Exactly. Exactly. Well, you know, it's easy, so God must be in it. Just because something's easy doesn't mean it's of the Lord. Just because something's hard doesn't mean it's not of the Lord. Let's finish this out here. Just for sake of time, I'm going to read. So those 600 men in verse 11 of the tribe of Dan, armed with weapons of war, set out from Zorah and Eshtaol, and they went up and camped at Kiriath Jearim in Judah. On this account, that place is called Mahana Dan to this day, or I think the camp of Dan is what it means. Behold, it is west of Kiriath Jearim, and they passed on from there to the hill country of Ephraim and came to the house of Micah. Then the five men who had gone to scout out the country of Laish said to their brothers, as they're in this hill country there near Micah's house, "Do you know that in these houses there's an ephod, household gods, a carved image and a metal image? Now therefore consider what you will do." And they turned aside there and came to the house of the young Levite at the home of Micah and asked him about his welfare. Now the 600 men of the Danites, armed with their weapons of war, stood by the entrance of the gate, and the 5 men who had gone to scout out the land went up and entered and took the carved image, the ephod, the household gods, and the metal image, while the priest stood by the entrance of the gate with the 600 men armed with weapons of war. And when these went into Micah's house and took the carved image, the ephod, the household gods, and the metal image, the priest said to them, "What are you doing?" And they said to him, "Keep quiet. Put your hand on your mouth and come with us and be to us a father and a priest. Is it better for you to be a priest to the house of one man or to be priest to a tribe and clan in Israel?" And the priest's heart was glad. He took the ephod and the household gods and the carved image and went along with the people. So they turned and departed, putting the little ones and the livestock and the goods in front of them. When they had gone a distance from the home of Micah, the men who were in the houses near Micah's house were called out, and they overtook the people of Dan. And they shouted to the people of Dan, who turned around and said to Micah, "What is the matter with you, that you come with such a company?" And he said, "You take my gods that I made, and the priests, and go away. And what have I left? How then do you ask me, 'What is the matter with you?'" And the people of Dan said to him, "Do not let your voice be heard among us, lest angry fellows fall upon you and you lose your life with the lives of your household." Then the people of Dan went their way. And when Micah saw that they were too strong for him, he turned and went back to his home. We'll stop there for a minute. What do we learn about these Danites from verses 14 through 17? What do we learn about them? Huh? They were just like Micah. They were thieves. Unashamed thieves. They didn't try to go and hide what they were doing. They came and they stole. They were idolatrous. This was not God's ordained plan for Israel. But they were very interested in getting some idols. And, hey, let's get a Levite priest too. What do we learn about this Levite in verses 18 through 20? This man, what was the relationship between Micah and this Levite priest that we read about in the last chapter? Yeah, it said that Micah became like a father to that young man. Formed this special relationship with him. He just loved him like a son. What do we learn about this Levite in verses 18 through 20? He didn't care. Not really. Initially, he was like, "Hey, what are you doing?" But greater than his loyalty and love for Micah was his ambition. Kind of like Micah's greater love was for money than for his mother, because he stole from his mom. Well, Micah turns around and has this young man that he loves like a son, ready to completely leave him. And we read that when this priest said yes to the Danites, he helped steal everything. "Hey, let me help you carry it out. This is great." And was the Levite torn about this? Was he, "Oh man, I feel bad about leaving Micah. Man, this is bad. Should I really do this?" What does the Bible tell us was the disposition of the Levite's heart? He was glad. Why? "I'm moving up in the world. I'm going to be making more. I'm going to have more authority, more respect, because now I'm not just priest to a house. I'm priest to a whole tribe." Is it better for the Levite to be the priest of a tribe rather than the priest for the household of one man? Is that better? Let's just pretend for a second that what he was doing was actually legitimate in the first place, which this wasn't. This is idolatrous, wicked worship that he had no authority to do. But say this was legitimate worship. Legitimate worship with Micah and legitimate worship with the Danites. Let's pretend. Would that make it better for him to be the priest and to go along with this, to be the priest of a tribe rather than being the priest of one man? I think a lot of that, you know, we look at our definition of what success is. And to us, we look at that and say success is more people, bigger, better, more impressive. But in the eyes of God, Noah was a preacher. He's a great shipbuilder. But not a very successful preacher. Only ones who were saved through his ministry was his own household. And Jesus, who was great with miracles and a very gifted preacher, eventually everyone except 11, so to speak, left him. And then they ran away. As we determine what's best, we have to let God determine what that looks like for us in our lives. There's a lot of opportunities we could all have. Things that we could do seem bigger, seem better, better job, a better team, better opportunity, a better house. Satan will tempt you with a better marriage, better relationships. You go this way or go that way. But what's better in God's eyes? I think it's a question that we have to ask and answer honestly, because whatever is the better God has for us, if there is something different, there will be a way to do it and honor God. And everything we see about what Micah is, or what this priest is doing here, is dishonoring to God. And as you look at Micah, what was the net gain and loss for Micah as you look back to the beginning of chapter 17 when he initially stole the silver from his mother? Where is Micah at now? Remember, he stole it and he gave it back, and his mom and blessed him and gave it back to him and did all this stuff. And he lost it all. He lost everything that the money was invested in. But he has gained additional sin. He's gained the pain of this humiliation. And he's gained the destruction and bitterness that comes over that broken relationship with the Levite who he had treated like a son. So the sin that he was willing to commit at the beginning to gain this wealth, he ended up losing all that he had gained by stealing, and then gaining all these consequences of sin in his life. Wasted time, years, destruction, hurt, hardened, broken hearts. I think it's a sad story, but it's an excellent picture about the wages of sin is death. It's destruction. And so we'll finally see here, well, let me read these last few verses. Dan finds a home. But the people of Dan took what Micah had made. Notice the people of Dan, these great godly people, right, who were going to go to these unsuspecting, vulnerable people in Laish and kill them and take their land, just like they had went to Micah's house and overpowered him and taken all his stuff and the priests too and brought them with them. They took what Micah had made and the priest who belonged to him, and they came to Laish, to a people quiet and unsuspecting, and struck them with the edge of the sword and burned the city with fire. And there was no deliverer because it was far from Sidon, and they had no dealings with anyone. It was in the valley that belongs to Beth Rehob. Then they rebuilt the city and lived in it. And they named the city Dan after the name of Dan, their ancestor, who was born to Israel. But the name of the city was Laish at the first. And the people of Dan set up the carved image for themselves. And Jonathan, the son of Gershom, son of Moses, and his sons were priests to the tribe of the Danites until the day of the captivity of the land. So they set up Micah's carved image that he made as long as the house of God was at Shiloh. Who was this young Levite? Well, his name was Jonathan. And who was this Jonathan? This Jonathan was Moses' grandson. Or at least Moses and Moses' son Gershom were in his family tree someplace. There could have been a few generations there. It's hard to say for sure, but possibly the direct grandson of Moses. Maybe that's one of the reasons everyone was so excited about having this Levite around. But was this Levite of the tribe of Aaron? No. Was this Levite supposed to be a priest? No. But the tribe of Dan set up the worship of false idols in their own land to compete with the worship of the true God down at Shiloh with the grandson of Moses in their new land that God had not directly given them. Was this a successful mission for the tribe of Dan? In their eyes, I think that's really important for us to see as we close here. To their eyes, they look like they had got everything they wanted to get. But we look at this with a different perspective and see that they had just gotten farther from God, and that eventually their destiny would be no different than Micah's. Micah seemed like he got all he was looking for a while, and then he lost everything. And that's always the way it is with sin. There may be a time and a period of time, and it may last years, where it seems like the choices of sin will profit you. But do not be deceived. God is not mocked. You will reap what you sow. If you sow righteousness, you will reap the peaceable fruit of righteousness. And if you sow wickedness, you will reap destruction.